Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
I'm Chet Haas from the UI Toolkit team.
And I'm Jeffrey Fango, also from the Android Studio Tool team.
First of all, Chet, you're back.
I am back.
How was it? Whatever it was.
It was long and it was lovely. I had so much time that I could accomplish great, great things, like read all kinds of literature and even, you know, write books and stuff. And instead, I just played through Horizon Zero Dawn all the way.
All right.
It was awesome.
It was like useful. And that was like, what, 6 weeks, 8 weeks?
Something like that, mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, well, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks.
And welcome, Jeffrey. So we are co-workers on the tools team.
Why did you have to think about that?
It seemed like he was weighing his level of discomfort as the word came out of his mouth.
Exactly.
Yeah, so what do you work on?
I work on various things, but my main focus is compilers for Android, both Android Studio and Android Platform.
All right, compilers. So, Jack?
Jack is no longer supported, yeah, but that's part of it. We did a lot of things in 2017, from going from Jack all the way to D8 with desugaring and Kotlin, and a lot of things happened in 2017.
All right, let's pick that apart. So,
wow, there were a lot of buzzwords and terms to define in that one sentence.
Yeah, so I know that about a year ago, or maybe two, we shipped something called Jack, which was a compiler. Right.
Yeah, it was an experimental compiler for Android Studio. It was the production compiler for Android Platform.
Right, and so it basically compiled directly from Java source code to DEX, and it handled Java 8 language features.
Correct. And just to clarify, so we used it internally when you were talking about the platform. Like, Jack was the compiler that we were using internally to build the platform.
The Android OS and the apps that came with the OS, they were built using the Jack compiler.
Right. And it was available in Android Studio, but it was not enabled by default.
Yeah, it was an experimental feature that you had to turn on.
That sounds great. So everyone's using that now, right?
No, yeah. So it turns out there were some issues with doing that. Like, people love their Java environment and all their tool sets with that. And so people rely on Java bytecode for that. There's a lot of tools that do static analysis, as well as rewriting, for instance, for code coverage, but also like crash report integration, et cetera. And so if you skip the Java bytecode step, all those tools break. And so we heard from customers that they couldn't use Jack because of that, even though they wanted to use Java 8 language features. And so we decided to reevaluate that. And instead, we took out Jack and we reinvested in our DEXing tool, the thing that takes Java bytecode to Delphic bytecode, as well as a separate tool to desugar Java 8 language features onto older versions of the bytecode format so that we can run them on older Android devices.
Right, so that was one of the things that we had offered in a later version of Jack a few months ago, was some of the new language features had an implementation, had a desugaring
correct
approach in
and
Jack.
So that's something people loved, right. But they wanted it so that they could still use Java bytecode.
Right, so instead of using Retro Lambda, they could just use the tools that we offered instead.
Yeah, correct.
For doing that specific thing. Right, so we couldn't actually deprecate Jack or get that out of the tool chain without actually having a solution for that.
Yep.
I see. And I guess another advantage, or another good thing about you investing in DEX, is that there are other front ends for Java bytecode than the Java compiler.
Yeah.
For example, the Kotlin compiler.
Exactly.
Which was suffering from using DEX. And so now you're doing what with the DEX compiler?
Yeah, so there's this project called D8R8. And so what it does, it's a whole bunch of tools in one. It replaces DEX as a DEXer to convert Java bytecode to Delphic bytecode. It integrates desugaring, so it takes Java 8 bytecode and generates Delphic bytecode that doesn't have Java 8 features. So for instance, your lambdas will just be emitted as normal classes. Your tri-rate resources will be supported on older versions that don't support Java 7 tri-rate resources. And then the last thing it does shrinking, like ProGuard style, whole program optimizations, remove code that you don't need in your app. And it's doing as one pipeline. And so there's a nice benefit to that. We only have to maintain one code base instead of multiple. The integration, everything happens once. Like in the current system, we read your Java classes, desugar them, write them, then do ProGuard, read your Java classes, write them, then we read the Java classes and convert them to DEX bytecode. So there will be a lot of built performance optimizations by only doing these things once.
And are there optimizations already compared to what they had through the optional Jack plugin before?
Yeah, so the D8 D8 dexing replacement generates smaller dex files than we had before. It also improves your debugging information. I don't know if you have seen one of the most starred bugs that we have for debugging is that if you have multiple return statements in a method, it randomly picks one because the dex toolchain optimized most of the return statements away, so it had only source information for one return statement. So you're like in the middle of an if statement with a return instead of breakpoint there, and then it gets moved and your code breaks on a different return statement, and it confused the heck out of our customers. So we fixed that in D8.
Okay.
And then for R8, we're still early there. So D8, we're shipping Android Studio 3.1 as default. It was on as experimental in 3.0, and now in 3.1, we're going to make it the default dexer. R8, we're still a bit further out because whole program optimization is more complicated than doing a simple transformation from Java bytecode to Delphic bytecode. I mean, it's still complicated, but not as complicated as whole program analysis. So we're still working on R8. But early results show that we can decrease the dex file size of some of the apps in the Android platform by 34%.
Nice. I'm trying to understand, is R8 something in addition that sits on top of D8, or are these parallel tools?
So it's the same code base.
Yeah.
So for us, it's the same tool that we're working on building,
It's an extra level
extra
of optimization.
It's you turn on when you're doing your build. So
it's the turbo button.
Yeah. So when you're doing your builds and you're doing your debugging, you usually don't turn on ProGuard today, right? It takes too long to do whole program optimization.
Yeah.
And also you want your nice detailed stack traces, et cetera. Right, so in debug builds, you'd use your Java compiler, then you run the dex tool to convert it to Delphic bytecode, and that's it. Your release builds, you spend more time to run ProGuard and produce the small binary as possible. And the same thing will be with R8. We will turn on R8 in your release builds, but not in your debug builds.
I think that's a good way to think of it, is that D in D8 is for debug variants, and R in R8 is for release variants. Now, apparently, I thought that was the reason for the naming, and Jeffrey told me it's not.
No, so the R8 project was started by Lars Buck, who has since retired, and he is famous for doing V8, the Chrome JavaScript engine. And turns out he really likes short code names.
They're faster.
And also the digit 8, incidentally.
Yep. And so that's where R8 came from, and that's what he'd been working on initially. And then we came in and we're like, hey, we also need to replace just the dexer. And that's why the D8 project was born.
Okay.
And one other thing, you mentioned this already with the return statement improvement. I was doing some bytecode instrumentation a couple of weeks ago, and I got this really weird error message from the build. I could not make sense of it. It was dex saying something that made no sense to me. And then I thought, oh, I've heard Jeffrey tell me that, D8 has better error messages. Let me try. So I enabled the optional flag in 3.1, got D8 running, and I got a beautiful error message that pinpointed the problem. So that's another really nice thing here, is we're going to have sane error messages.
Yeah. So yeah, one of the things that always stood out to me in the dex code base is that if you hit the max dex limit, it gives this cryptic error message saying that you have more than 65,000 methods and doesn't tell you why that's bad or how to resolve it. And so you have to go to Stack Overflow and find that you need to turn on multidexing. In D8, we tried to really work on the error messages to be more prescriptive. And so we'll actually tell you, hey, it's time to turn on multidexing.
Oh, I thought it just emitted a URL to Stack Overflow. Quick fix, just go to Stack Overflow. So I was curious about the debugging information. So you talked about the return statement. The one that I've always been amused by over the years is when you're stepping along and then it steps back. Because it doesn't quite, the order of the source code is not quite what it got compiled to, or it may go over one statement a couple of times, and so it'll sort of go back and forth and back and forth as I'm just trying to step through a linear flow.
Yeah, so we should do better. It's still not perfect because the way that the JVM bytecode stores debug information is very different from the Delphic file format.
Mm-hmm.
In Delphic, it's a kind of a state machine that you build for your debug information. So we have to do this translation. We think we do it pretty well, but
yeah.
If you still see issues, please report bugs.
Okay. Right.
All right. So that's D8 and R8. So R8 is also a replacement for ProGuard.
Yes.
So do I have to learn some new file format to write my ProGuard config files? Or how do I tell you which of my methods are accessed via reflection?
Yeah, so we try to be ProGuard compatible both in the keep rules as well as the arguments you pass to ProGuard. Now, we don't do exactly the same optimizations as ProGuard does. We haven't gone and say, hey, ProGuard has these 20 optimizations. We're going to implement them one by one. We analyzed like a lot of apps and said, hey, these kind of optimizations we should do, and implemented those and like did like analysis of like performance costs versus like benefit of how much code gets shrunk. In our test, we are usually better than ProGuard, but we don't do, it's not a one-to-one replacement of the optimizations. So the user interface of like command line arguments and keep rules is the same, but the underlying implementation is very different.
Yeah, as I recall, there are a lot of command line flags to ProGuard to tell it which optimizations to enable or usually disable.
Yeah.
And in the Android Tools team, we curate a master ProGuard file that always gets merged by the Gradle plugin. So when you tell the Gradle plugin, here's my ProGuard rules, we take those plus our platform ones. And we base the initial set there on sort of, you know, conventional knowledge of things that could be risky. Like, hey, there's this report that this optimization can cause some crashes. Let's turn it off. So I'm wondering if people are supplying these flags to turn off optimizations, do you just ignore those ProGuard flags then because you have your own sense of what's going to work?
Yeah, so we have a compatibility mode where we try to be as close to ProGuard as possible. But we also believe that we can do more optimizations because we have a really good understanding of the code. So we have this more aggressive mode as well that you can opt into. And we're actually working on a feature where we will generate a set of ProGuard rules that is the diff between the more conservative and the aggressive mode so that you can say, let me see what the difference is. But let's say, and we've seen this when we were trying out R8 on Android platform build, is that people assume because ProGuard didn't remove something from their code that they could call in tests. And then we came in with a more aggressive R8. And all of a sudden their test started breaking because we deleted the code that they were relying on in the test. And so we have this mode where we can generate the extra keep rules, the difference between those two modes. And then you can manually decide which parts you want to keep or not.
Right. Yeah. It would be nice if maybe I could tell the build tool, hey, I want you to build two versions, one for my tests. So you consider the test source code as well for a keep, but also a production that doesn't.
Yeah, and we're looking at making more module support available anyway, because people will need that for instant apps. Like people are going to split up their app in multiple modules now. And we want to make sure that we do our shrinking considering all of those modules, right?
Do you try to figure out what the user is doing with reflection calls to try to auto keep some things? Or is that something that's probably a losing battle and might as well not try?
We do detect simple patterns, right? Like if you say
class.forName.
Class.forName and you pass a constant.
Okay.
But if you are doing some crazy scheme of building that string that you pass to class.forName, then
yeah, like a layout inflator.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So it is still limited. We have some big dreams about at one point making like a better way of describing this than ProGuard keep rules, but our first release, we're really trying to get to compatibility and just get the first release out. And then we'll start thinking about what we can do next.
Yeah. A quick PSA. There's also the keep annotation in the support library, which I think we've set up our default ProGuard rules to actually understand.
Yep.
So if you just annotate your classes or methods with @keep, that is the same as putting it in the ProGuard file, but it's closer to the source code, so it's more likely to follow the code around and so forth. So it's pretty useful to know.
So the real question, so as you said, people don't use ProGuard by default. They just enable it in a release build to save themselves time. How does the performance of building with R8 compare?
So R8 is significantly faster than ProGuard from all our testing that we have found.
Okay.
It's at Google, we have some really big apps, of course. And some of the apps, they were taking more than 20 minutes to run ProGuard. And the same apps took us about 4 or 5 minutes with R8.
Okay.
So we believe that there's some significant savings. It will differ from app to app, of course.
And whatever options you enable, once we figure out how to enable those options, I guess. I'm thinking UML diagrams. We do that. Okay. And then I was going to ask earlier, on an earlier topic, you were talking about desugaring and it decides whether or not to desugar. Is that based on a min SDK?
Yeah, it's a combination of your source language version, like if you set it to 6, obviously we don't need to run desugar. And then the Min SDK.
Yeah. Okay. So it's done automatically. This is not an option. Like when they don't need to go into some tool configuration dialog and figure this stuff
out. Yeah, no. We have a couple of overrides. So we don't only do desugaring of Java 8 language feature, but also of 7. So there's like try with resources in Java, Java 7. And the interesting thing there is that like there's these APIs that you can call with try with resources to get the suppressed exceptions. Those APIs are not available in the old version. So we play a few tricks there, but it should, like 99% of the apps, people shouldn't have to worry about it.
So I know we enabled this, I think in 3.0 maybe.
So in Android Studio 3.0, we enabled desugar for Java 1.8. It's a standalone tool there because we didn't have D8 ready. So it does go from Java bytecode to Java bytecode.
Yeah, so there is a bit of a build cost.
Actually, in like 3.0, is it quite significant because we also don't do desugaring incrementally.
Yeah.
In 3.1, we're still using that same tool because we want people to be able to opt out of D8 if they have to. But it's
if you opt into D8, do you still run desugar then, or you just get desugaring natively as part of D8?
So in 3.1... D8 is enabled by default. You can still opt out of it. Like, we're compiler folks. We like to be conservative, right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't want to break the world. So there's an opt-out. Desugaring is still the separate tool in 3.1, but you can opt into our new in-process desugaring. And there's actually instructions in the README on how to do that.
Okay. And you don't plan to turn that on in 3.1?
Not by default.
Okay. All right.
Again, like, we don't want to break people's app, and people's livelihood is at stake, right?
Yeah, so, but that's, assuming that you have good test coverage, and of course, all of our listeners do, you could, this is a good trick. You turn this on in 3.1, and your builds are going to be probably significantly faster.
Yeah. It from what we see, it saves about 30 to 40%.
Wow. That's a pretty good investment if your app doesn't crash.
And of the dexing, right? Not of the whole build.
Right. But dexing, isn't dexing a pretty large, if we take Progr out of the equation, which of course is always the biggest, slowest part of the build, if you take that out, dexing is second largest, isn't it?
It's hard to say in general, right? A lot of people some people have a lot of code, some people have a lot of resources.
Yeah, I thought resources was a big part, which is why AAPT2
right, which is now on by default as well.
Right.
Yeah. And so, I think the whole team is general. We are working very hard to make the build faster and faster, right? The Gradle team, the APT2 team, the compiler team, everybody contributes to the build time. And so everybody is trying to make it faster.
Right. So do you have favorite optimizations? You talked about significantly shrinking the code size. Can you talk about like how? Like what's the magic that makes that work, or what are other good performance optimizations?
In order to shrink code, you need to find out which code is called and which code is not called, right? Mm-hmm. And so in order to do that, you need to do whole program analysis. We're spending a lot of time just finding all the usages and potential usages and determining if some code can be called. So that's really the main thing, like shake everything out of the tree that's not being used.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing that we're doing. We are starting to implement a lot of tricks as well. So one of the things that we do is, for instance, for string builder, people have this very specific pattern of like you create a string builder, you append, 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 and then you call toString. We actually, instead of inlining code, we do outlining there, where we take that pattern, make a method, and then in the code that did the string builder pattern, we just call that method. Now we deduplicate your code for the string builder pattern.
Okay.
And that's a very specific case, but like those kind of optimizations, like they start paying off once you have a bunch of those.
Yeah.
I know one favorite optimization that people point to in ProGuard is the ability to take enums and turn it back to ints, assuming you didn't, subclass the instances of the enum or anything like that. Is that one that, and that of course has the advantage that you don't get the downside of enums, but you have the nice code readability of enums.
Yeah,
is that one you're doing yet?
We haven't done that yet. It's on our list to investigate. That one is a little tricky, right? Because if you do reflection or you call get the name of the field, you have to be very careful to do that replacement.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have to turn the two-string into something smart.
Yep. So we haven't done that one yet. We are now starting to look at Kotlin-specific optimizations as well. So one of the nice things about Kotlin is that there's properties, right? So like you don't have to worry as much about all your getters and setters. But it also means that people are starting to use more getters and setters. And as you know, method references like add to the problem of having to use multidexing and making your apps larger in general. So we're actually working on doing a whole program analysis to see, are these simple properties, can we change them back to a field? You still want to keep them as properties in your Kotlin code because like you're building a shared library. You want to get the benefits of versioning. But then when you do a whole program analysis, you know that it's this instance of the property and you can actually get rid of them in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that should be really helpful. You'll get from 3 to 1, basically.
Yeah.
In terms of references. That's good. My favorite optimization in terms of shrinking is, of course, resource shrinking, right?
Yes.
We have this feature in the Gradle plugin, but it's kind of hacky. You know, it can't go back and forth. So what we do is we take the output from ProGuard so we can see, okay, when we removed all the unused code, here's the remaining code. Now, which resources are you still referencing from the used code? And then we run APT afterwards to sort of shrink that. But you don't get that feedback loop of, well, the resources can reference code, of course. And so if any resource is then pointing to code, we don't know. Whereas in whole program analysis, if you were to do this, if you build up your global usage graph in R8, you could remove it all.
Yeah, so we don't do that yet, but we were just talking about that this morning, and so it's definitely something we'll be looking into.
Cool. What about where applications use JNI, use native code that can then up-reference?
Yeah, so there's actually some interesting change that we probably should talk about. So people use JNI, but they don't always use it correctly. And we were looking into some bug reports when people started to use D8 recently, where they were broken by this exact pattern. So what they were doing is they were holding on to some native resource by passing an integer along from the native side to represent the pointer of that resource.
And then they just assumed that that's good forever?
They were assuming that it would be good for the lifetime of the method.
Okay.
And that was valid when they were using DX, because DX didn't really optimize the register allocation as much.
Yeah.
In D8, we try to really reuse registers whenever we can, which means that if we can detect that a local variable is no longer used, we reuse the register, which means that the garbage collector kicks in and removes the managed object.
Yeah.
And now they don't have that handle anymore. And so people were seeing crashes on the native side because of a optimization that we did that was correct as you look at like the language spec.
Yeah.
But it turned out that it has, like we changed the timing of like when objects were being garbage collected.
Interesting. So I'm trying to understand this more though. So let's say you're in the middle of a method at the Java side, you call through to JNI and you pass an int that becomes a JINT and you dereference to whatever native pointer you want. That variable that got passed down is still within scope. So how could it be collected? How can you determine that it's not referenced anymore, even though you're within the scope that it was passed?
Well, you have no more reads of it, right, in your Java code.
Okay, so you're just not counting, the JNI is a black box.
Chet, this reminds me of a bug you talked about on the podcast a few years ago where you were in some code that was loading a wallpaper. And so you were reassigning to this bitmap. You had a bitmap field.
Yeah.
And you were on the right-hand side of the assignment. You were like doing some new load.
Yeah.
But the way this was being evaluated, it's still the left-hand side was still there, still pointing to this other bitmap, and there wasn't enough RAM to load them both.
Right.
But with this analysis, if you can tell, hey, you know, assuming this read works, we're not going to need the left-hand side anymore. You could probably free it up before you do the bitmap and you wouldn't have that out-of-memory exception.
Yeah, I have to look at the specific code, but yeah, we might have freed that object for you already.
So there's an optimization that came out, that must be what we were referring to at the time, where I think it was talking to Elliot about this back in the day, where it was actually better to assign a variable to null before assigning it to a new variable, because then the garbage collector could make the correct determination that it could get rid of it. So if it needed the memory upon creation of the new object, it could collect the old.
That's something you, the programmer, can do. Here, it sounds to me like the smarter analysis of registers should let you free this.
Yeah, before. I'd have to look at Chad's specific code sample, but it sounds like this would be one of those cases where, because of our, if we decide we can reuse that register and we need to use the register, we kick the data out early.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so what's the fix for the bug out there then?
To do your JNI implementations correctly.
All right. So it's being closed as this is not the way you treat objects. Do they, if they do a global ref, like if they actually not just start using the variable, but if they actually say, okay, lock this down for me, that will prevent it from being collected, right?
Yeah, or if you just assign it to a static variable in your class, then you ought to be good, right?
Static variable at the native side?
This was the case that the Java side didn't hold on to it, right?
Right, but if, okay, I was wondering whether there's something that they could or should be doing at the native side to basically tell the garbage collector that I'm still using this thing, or is it too late by then?
It's probably not a good idea to pass native pointers to the Java side whenever needed, right?
That would never happen.
No, it would never happen.
but it's more like, isn't that why JNI has the global ref methods? Like, is that the way to do it properly if they're doing this?
Yeah, I'd have to look into this specific example again, what would be a better code pattern. But for most people, the JNI is magic and they just poke at it until it works, right?
Indeed. It's an ugly interface, so I think people get away from it as quickly as they can.
Yep.
Okay. So I wondered, I guess my original question about JNI was more about the optimizations that you could do. If you see an application using native code and you want to optimize by removing methods that are unreferenced, how do you know what they're doing at the native level?
Yeah, we don't look at that at all right now.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you were to use JNI to find a class in the Java side and then use the native side of Reflection to create an instance of that.
Yeah. It may not exist.
We don't know about that, so you have to write a keep rule just like you have to do with Progar today.
Okay. All right.
All right, so from native code to the exact opposite, Kotlin.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it quite opposite.
In terms of developer friendliness.
Ah, yes, I'm with you there.
Not to expose any bias there.
No, we're not biased here, though.
No, I just speak the truth. Sure, C is fine. I haven't missed C code a single day since I stopped programming in it in 2000. Anyway, you're pretty involved with the Kotlin effort. So you're sitting on which committee?
As you might remember, last year at I.O., we announced that we are going to support Kotlin as a first-class language in Android.
Oh, I heard that, yeah.
And we also said that we're going to work with JetBrains on forming a foundation. And so as part of that effort, we've created this thing called the Kotlin Language Committee. And so we are in charge of making sure that the language evolves well. And so Andrei Veshlov from JetBrains is on it, Will Cook, who is an independent researcher, and then me from Google on it. And so we don't want to be on the day-to-day design of new features. We believe JetBrains is doing really well on that.
They are.
And, we don't want to have a committee that makes it years to implement any new feature.
Kotlin 2018.
SV1
Revision 5.
Release 2.
I can see the KSR specs and yep.
Yeah, so JetBrains is doing fine developing new Kotlin language features. What we were helping with is the versioning and breaking changes, making sure that as we adding new features, maybe removing some features that didn't pan out, that customers can expect a good way of migrating their code, making sure that the code from 2 years ago can still be surfaced, etc. One of the first things we did is we came up with this set of guidelines on how changes to language should be made. And how they should be reviewed, how they should be rolled out. Let's say you're turning something that is normal code in one release to code that doesn't compile in a future release. You first introduce it as a warning that people can know that they should fix it at some point. And then in a later release, you make it an error, but still allow them to turn it back into a warning for a while before you completely cut off the feature.
It's interesting. It's a new approach in Android development where the language can actually change. So you go to build that app again and it won't.
Yeah. And so what the JetBrains guys were really good at when they were developing the language, they had to make a bunch of breaking changes as they were trying out right before they reached 1.0. And the thing that they did really well that I've not seen other languages do well is to build tools to help people who have existing code bases to migrate along. And so the thing that we came up with is that as long as we keep building these kind of tools, it's okay to have this path where you deprecate things in two versions.
Yeah.
As long as people can run those tools and keep their code going.
Right. And also importantly, this does not break things on existing devices. It doesn't break existing apps because it already got built into the Java bytecode and the DEX file and the APK. Like exactly. Nothing's changing on that side, on the compiled side.
Yep.
I mean, in fact, even with our repeatable builds in Android Studio, you know, your project continues building because everything is versioned. Your language level is fixed. Your libraries versions are fixed. Your source code will build a year from now, 10 years from now. But if you try to bump to the latest Gradle plugin, language will code, then you'll need to migrate.
Obviously. Or if you pull in, I mean, if it depends on your dependency chain, because if you pull in a library that is dependent upon,
you're pulling in a specific version, which doesn't change. But the second you decide, I want to get the new support library, and then it pulls in, now you're in the business of needing to update.
Yeah, because it was clear in talking to the JetBrains folks that things could change. Like I saw them talking about coroutines, which is this, you know, new capability that is potentially in flux. Like it's kind of an exciting thing. On the other hand, they're getting feedback on how people are using it, and you get the feeling, well, maybe this could change in the future. I don't know if it was coroutine specifically, but it was something in that area where it's kind of a beta thing that could change, which means if people write code around it a year from now, they may need to change that code, right?
Yeah, but they did a really nice thing there. If you start using experimental features in your code and you're publishing them as a library for other people to reuse, there's actually metadata in that binary that will block any consumer of that library from using it without also saying, I want to use experimental features and I'm willing to be broken by experimental features.
Yeah. Okay.
That's it's really thoughtful way they've done this.
And it pops up a dialogue and asks the user if they want to use experimental Kotlin features.
Yep.
Let's involve everybody in the decision process.
So have you been doing any Kotlin coding for fun?
I've recently been playing with some server-side Kotlin. So one of the projects that the JetBrains folks have been working on is this thing called Ktor.
I love the suffix of that.
Yeah. So it's a framework for building websites, web applications. If you look at like most modern web apps, they have like these routing mechanisms where you define like any request that looks like this, like routed to this code, etc. And in Java, we're kind of still stuck with the servlets stuff, right? And so Ktor is this framework where you can use the Kotlin's DSL mechanism to define your routes for your website. So I've been playing with that. It's really nice.
Yeah. So that's not what you did for your break, Chet?
I played a video game.
Nice. All right. What else are we missing in the compiler space for Android?
Talked about Desugar, Jack, R8.
Yeah, a lot of stuff happening.
Covered quite a bit. Yeah, I mean, that's all year, right? Like, happened quite fast.
And the time frame again, just to get concrete about the details, you said it's
in Android Studio 3.0, that's out right now. D8 is optional. You can opt into it and play with it and see if you see any issues or not. In Android Studio 3.1, which is in Canary right now, maybe beta by the time this podcast releases, it's turned on by default.
Okay.
In 3.1, there is optional in-process desugaring, which you can try out. And then in future releases, and I cannot give you version numbers yet.
So R8 is not out there. We're just saying we're working
on it. Can you opt into that in any way or no, not yet?
So R8 is an open source project. So you can get it, build the source yourself, and play with it. The integration into Gradle is not done yet. So you cannot play with it from Gradle yet.
Okay.
I picture a Gradle sync error that just never resolves itself.
Those never happen.
It's probably not going to be a sync issue, but you might have some issues trying to build, which happens after sync. All right. That's all I have.
This seemed like a big laundry list when you started of like, here's all the things that we could talk about. Did we cover them all?
I think so.
We did, yeah.
All right. So cool. Go play.
Jeffrey's very effective. All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.